Welcome back to hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinny Eastwood Show. We're broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com 5 days a week for your listening and intellectual pleasure. My very special guest is Melon Benedict from melon-thomas.com. And what we were talking about before the show was just about who he is and what he does, you know, that kind of thing. And what occurred to me is this guy is an inventor. He's who Deepak Chopra calls the encyclopedia of the afterlife. He is somebody who's a practical person, okay? He invents stuff and that kind of thing. And through science, you're actually able to measure these things that previously had been subject just to the realm of belief. And indeed, his belief was once that humanity is like a cancer on the planet. And incidentally, your thoughts manifest, and he did get cancer. He didn't even know what hospice was until he was in one. And his perspective on the world was radically changed after his near-death experience as a result. And he became a full-time researcher after this experience. He's studied longevity. He likes to give a presentation called Who Lives to 100 and Why? How longevity and science really can go hand in hand. And also, another interesting element that we talked about, which I mentioned in the first hour, was how prophets back in the day who made predictions that didn't pan out got killed. And how interesting it would be if we still held prophets to account like that today. How many people spent so much time convincing people that 2012 was going to be the end of humanity, or there was going to be some kind of consciousness shift or whatever. Nothing happens, and they experience no consequence. How interesting. So his website is melon-thomas.com. That's melon-thomas.com. He's a man about the afterlife and near-death experience. So we're going to talk to him today. Melon, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you, Benny. It's fun to be on the air with you.
Yeah, most people say that. So, where would you like to lead off?
Well, I don't know, really. This is a new audience to me, but basically, one of the greatest lessons that I've ever learned from my experience, I'm someone who had a very negative attitude about everything and about the whole world, and I'm not here to pump everybody up, but I can tell you that I was an agnostic that had a near-death experience, and I didn't. I wasn't even an atheist, because an atheist at least argue with you about the subject. I didn't even show that much interest, but I can tell you that I did survive dying. It was a well-documented case, an hour and a half without vital signs, and that by no means is any record in the annals of medical records of people without vital signs. It's interesting. There have been so many people that have had no vital signs for over 50 minutes to days and have come back to consciousness without any brain damage at all. This is a very interesting scenario. But I can tell you this. How it affected me was that I was very, very surprised to see that there is another dimension to this life, another realm to this life that's very real, and I believe based in quantum physics. And when I had my experience with what people call the light, which I consider sort of the mother frame matrix of collective consciousness on planet Earth, to put it that way, you know, a little more scientifically, I wasn't led to believe in deities or some white god in the sky on a throne, but I did discover that there is something super important going on here, and it has a spirit. It's called the spirit of life, and the collective consciousness of the entire planet, everything on it, and every human being to this point has added up to an amazing point in history. And so I believe now, I don't even want to call it a spiritual experience, but I have a belief in that there is a real spirit here, a spirit of life of which we're all a part of. And this is explained scientifically through what's called the Gaia concept, or they may say Gaia in England. It was actually discovered by James Lovelock, an Englishman, who, after many, many years of studying, he's one of the great inventors and scientists of our time, many years of studying planet Earth, he saw and scientifically measured that Earth was self-regulating, self-modulating, and seemed to act very, very intelligently. And then that corresponded about the same time that, you know, the first astronauts on their way to the moon took the first picture of the whole Earth, you know, that famous picture. It was the first time the picture of the whole Earth had been taken by a human, and the astronauts were all profoundly changed, because when they looked at this Earth, it looked alive, and they didn't see borders, they didn't see races of people, they didn't see political parties. They saw one living planet, and that's the greatest lesson that I've learned, is something I call the Gaia perspective, is looking at this entire living system as a whole system. In other words, humans are a part of the system. We are not the sum total of it. We're not even the rulers of it. The real rulers of this Earth are the microbes. You know, just for an example, over 90% of life on Earth is microbial, and in your body, in the human body, you have trillions of cells. Well, over 90% of those cells are microbes, and they evolved from the beginning of time to be here now with you. And they have incorporated into our lives. They control our hormones, brain functions. We could not be conscious without them. So we have sort of a, what I call a human chauvinism about what intelligence is and what life is, really. And so we're having, like, since the 1990s, we've been in a golden age of science. And we're having this, I call it almost like Galileo experience, because before Galileo, everyone thought the entire universe, you know, evolved around the Earth. The Earth was a center of everything. And we found out that's not true. Well, mankind is about to find that out. We are not the center of anything. And it's very important to cherish what we have collectively over time built on this planet in cooperation with this planet. So it's very, very important to cherish what we have been able to manage to come out. Imagine the calcium in your bones, the iron in your blood, all came from stars that died billions of years ago. So in one way, imagine a stone coming into consciousness. We're like a rock that became conscious. The minerals in our body, all that came from stars. And so this
in my opinion, there's a lot of people who don't have much more intelligence than a rock that are conscious.
Granted, you know, I have a philosophy, and that is treat everyone as if they're super intelligent until proven otherwise.
Yeah, unfortunately, I see so much proof. Now, you're talking about the Earth as an organism and agnosticism and this kind of thing. And something occurred to me about my concept of God, just personally for a second here. It's a macroorganism. Right. There was this dude who invented this microscope, I think, in the early 1900s, who was able to get 60,000 times magnification. Normal electrostatic microscopes, 10,000. He was able to look at a cell and go, okay, well, look, it's an independent organism. It's walking around. It's doing all these things. It's got its own kind of little thing, and it's working in harmony with all the other cells around it. So he looked inside that cell, and then within it, there was all these other little cells that were far, far smaller, but they all were working in harmony and making up that one larger cell. And then he looked inside those even smaller cells and found that they were made up of even smaller cells that were all working around in harmony and that kind of thing. And then he looked inside those, and so on and so forth. It's, in my opinion, life is infinite, up the scale, down the scale, right? So I'm a subjective organism called Vinnie Eastwood. Within my body, there's 5 trillion cells. Each one and every one of those cells has their own consciousness and their own this, that, and the other. And to them, the cells in my body, I'm God. But to me, I'm a cell in, say, the planet, and let's say the planet and all our collective unconscious and all of the different organisms working in harmony and that kind of thing in a survival mode. That's God. Would you agree? Some kind of late psionic energy that's in between all these organisms everywhere creates one overall organism. And then the planet itself is part of a much larger organism called the galaxy or whatever?
Yeah, that's basically the Gaia concept. You can look at the whole Earth, our solar system, then you can look at our galaxy, and there must be at least 6 billion more planets like Earth in this galaxy by conservative estimates. And then you look, this galaxy is a form of a cluster of galaxies, and it is this incredible galactic universal organism that we are a minuscule part of. And, okay. And that, you know, you can label that anything you want. I choose not to use the word God because that has sort of a religious overtone and separates people. Because then you know, which God are we talking about now?
Yeah. And that's another thing is that we had a conversation before the show, and the fathers of science, you know, Newton and all of them, actually really deeply religious people. Yet, what science has been misconstrued for has been to replace any concept of spirituality or higher consciousness or something like that by trying to prove that it doesn't exist. I found that the dumbest people I found are the most highly educated. You've ever found that?
Well, it seems to be more and more so that way.
How do you reconcile that one? And I wanted to ask you as well, would you be able to describe your life and death experience for the audience? You know, you were dead for an hour and a half. What did you see?
Okay. And this is back before the near-death thing was very popular and, you know, it's all kind of cut and paste now. But I was someone that was fairly clueless. I wasn't interested in any of this work. I'd never met a person that had a near-death or anything like that. I'd never even heard of hospice before I ended up in one. So fairly clueless stumbling into this. And I really believed that when you died, the light went out and that was it. And that's what I believed. And so I did succumb to my disease. I was diagnosed with terminal brain disease in 81, given 6 to 8 months to live. It was incurable, inoperable at the time. And I'm one of those people who decided to do nothing because the aggressive chemo and radiation and even surgery would have left me a vegetable before I died. At least I had a doctor that was honest enough to tell me that. And his advice to me was, go home and make your peace. Well, that wasn't much comfort. But I did not go in for any treatments at all, and did succumb to my disease. And for me, it happened this way. I remember waking up one morning around sunrise, and I had a feeling that I was either going to die today or very, very soon. And it's the same feeling I've heard soldiers talk about before battle. I've heard mothers talk about. There's a feeling that comes, and it's actually quite a clear feeling. There was no fear in it. It was quite clear. And I had a reckoning. And then I went back to sleep. And the next thing I know is I was standing outside of my body, looking at my body on the bed. And I was very confused because it was super real. It wasn't like a dream at all. And I then what happened is what they now call a life review began. And this was like snippets of my life from the moment of my death ticking all the way backwards. And I got to see snippets of my life that helped in a way were very sad because I realized I had wasted my life. I'm someone who was raised from a fairly average dysfunctional family, and my family had no love skills at all. They weren't bad people. We just didn't know how to love each other, show love, or even receive it. So I was someone who had lived my life with no love skills and no receptors to feel love, so to speak. You know what I mean? I used to say that love was a mental illness and exhibited all the symptoms of mental illness. Skeptic, and I got to see that how many people had actually really loved me, tried to love me and give me love, show me love, but I had no receptors to receive it. I couldn't even see it. And that made me very, very sad, incredibly sad. And so for all of you out there that may think no one loves you or there's no love out there, it's just that you aren't seeing it. You aren't able to receive it as I was. And that made me very, very sad. And I was watching all these snippets and little things, big things, and it ticked all the way back in my life. And I was at a point where I was in my mother's womb and had memories. And later, after my near-death experience, later I was able to discuss this with my mother. And there were things she had never told me. She said, "You don't know that. You weren't even born. I've never even told you about that." And one incident was my biological father at the time was an alcoholic and a bad one when he got drunk, and he beat my mother quite a bit, and especially when she was pregnant. And I remember being conscious inside her, feeling her getting beaten. And I was connected to her nervous system. I was connected to her hormones. I could feel her fear that she thought she was going to die, that this was going to be it this time. And I felt all of that. And modern science has now proven that fetuses from very early on in their development are really quite sensitive to light, sound, vibrations, and noises. And in that beating of my mother, which he did many times while she was carrying me, in that beating, I developed my worldview before I was ever born. My worldview, and it wasn't like intelligence, it wasn't like an intellectual kind of understanding, it was more of a sensing, you know, a raw, like when someone's yelling at you, you sense that something's not right, you know. And my worldview was set before I was born. My worldview was that wherever I was a really bad place, it was painful, and this voice, which was a male voice, was the most horrible thing in the world. And I carried a chip on my shoulder to the day I died. I never trusted men. I never had a best male friend. I had female friends. I was also a big kid. I was tall, and I was a football type guy. But I was someone who could not stand, I could not tolerate someone bullying someone else. So I had all these chips on my shoulder. And when I was in school, I was a bully beater. And so this
hold on a second, Melon. We'll close off on the bully beater type thing because we're coming to break now. We'll be right back in just a few minutes, ladies and gentlemen. We'll continue along this same strain. Melon Benedict from melon-thomas.com. Back in a tick.
Look at me, driving and I won't stop. And it feels so good to be alive and on top.
Welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live 5 days a week on AmericanFreedomRadio.com, trying to bring you the lighter side of genocide, just some fun every single day, because, well, I think, personally, that there's a lot of real nasty things out there. And when people are reading out the news every day, it's 99% bad news. Where's the fun in that? There's a heck of a lot of cool people out there who've had amazing experiences. And you know what, Melon? I think you're one of those people. And I've been thinking about this the last couple of days. Knowing what's happening today and all the bad things and everything is irrelevant. I think if you haven't heard something before, and you learn something of value, that's news. What do you reckon?
True. Yeah, you know, I'm I've been a full-time researcher since my near-death experience because my experience with the light, and it was an intelligence. I looked at it as a sum total intelligence of the entire planet I was speaking to. Encouraged me to. Because I asked a lot, I spent a lot of time asking questions. It's a well-documented case. I asked a lot of questions, and I was very scientifically oriented. I asked a lot of questions. And one of the first questions I had to ask this light that people meet is, well, why humanity? I mean, why even bother? Humans seem so dark and doomed and evil, and they just kill each other all the time. What's the point? You know, and what was interesting is that the light showed me all the goodness in the world. And I've been researching that ever since. What the light showed me was this, some very simple things. At first the light showed me, so you think this is evil, let me show you something. And the light showed me what looked like a monster. And the light said, this monster has killed more humans and animals and caused more pain than all the wars of mankind put together to this day. And it was absolutely true. And then It was like the light reduced this monster. It was like I had been looking at it under an electron microscope. When the light reduced it, it was a mosquito. And the light then asked me, this has caused more damage, more pain, more deaths of human beings in all the wars of humanity put together. Is the mosquito evil? And then the light showed me my cancer cell. And did you know that, and I've researched everything the light has told me, did you know that most cancer cells would live forever if they didn't kill the host? The cancer cells really don't age. They have telomeres that don't go short as the cells divide. And telomeres are, you know, the latest research in anti-aging. Every time your cells divide, the little chain gets a little shorter. And at some point, you know, you age and get old. Well, cancer itself would never die unless it killed the host. And that's fascinating to understand. And then the light said something that I've been looking at ever since. And I'm a full-time researcher in what's good on planet Earth, and I don't have to look very far. But, you know, the media isn't going to show it to you because it's boring. How about a news show that said things are better than they've ever been? And that is the truth. And in my DVDs and on my website, I try to show people this from a research point of view. The homicide rate is at the lowest it's been at since homicides have been measured in civilized countries. That's since the 1200s. The homicides rates are minuscule compared to what they used to be. And secondly, my cancer cell wasn't evil, but it was killing me. And I got a whole new view of what is evil and what isn't. I got to see, the light showed me that humans, and this may blow some people's mind, that humans are the most graceful beings and animals on this planet. We are pure grace compared to everything else. We just have a very negative attitude about ourselves, mainly because of our religions, telling us we're worthy, we're no good, we're sin, we're going to go to hell, all of that. But did you know that right under your feet in the carpet, there's a war going on at the insect and microbial level. Just outside your window, there's a war going on right out in your yard. And there are no rules. It's kill or be killed. It's that way in nature from day one on planet Earth. It's kill or be killed in the microbial, animal, and insect world and plant world. Human beings have come out of all of this to have law and order, to have grace. Humans kill each other and hunt and prey on each other far less than any other creature on planet Earth, and that is the truth. Now, we are beings that are coming to an end of war soon. Certainly by the next 100 years, we won't have wars on this planet at all anymore. They don't make sense. They're too expensive. And by the way, wars are always created by somebody that wants to profit from them in some way.
In fact, this reminds me of a conversation I was having yesterday. You know, the libertarian non-aggression principle, you know, you can't initiate force against somebody else. You know, you can't kill them, hurt them, or steal their stuff, right? Does that apply to every species? And it's like, well, no, it doesn't. Sharks eat the fish. Lions eat the zebras. It's law of the jungle, right? That's natural law. So how do humans govern that type thing? And it's like, well, we've got the capacity of farming. We have the ability to treat animals really, really nicely and kill them really humanely and eat them and sustain ourselves. Okay? We don't have to be animalistic about it. We can be quite nice and try and be nice to each other. What's the moral complex here? You know? I wondered about this very much. And I think it's like, when I see any problem with humanity or anything that we're doing that's bad, usually it's the result of a very small, determined bunch of people who are usually psychopathic or sociopathic. Their brains just ain't firing properly. And they do horrible things to other people because they haven't really tapped into their higher consciousness. They're still on that law of the jungle level, and they don't realize how great, how grand they are.
It's true. You know, I've traveled to so many countries since my near-death experience, and I can tell you that if it was legal to kill you and it was, quote, karma-free to kill you, most people on Earth would never hurt you. And until you start starving them, bombing them, and torturing them. But you know, how many stories have you seen where a total stranger will give an organ to somebody to help them live, give a kidney, you know, give part of their liver? It's pretty incredible. And humans come up with some very interesting concepts that don't exist at any other level on this planet. One is retirement. What a concept. We're the only ones that have any chance of retirement in the whole kingdom. So these are graceful concepts.
I was just wondering this, you know. You ever get that point where you're frustrated? It's like, why can't stuff be easy? Why can't, you know, why can't I just be happy? Or why do all these bills have to come in at the same time? And it's like, well, dude, are you still alive? Yeah. Well, then you're going to wind up being frustrated or perplexed or in danger of something. That's what life is about.
I heard a very good joke not long ago, and a man was telling me, he said, why is Earth the most favorite place for souls to reincarnate? And I said, why? And he said, this is where you come when you need a vacation from eternal bliss. So don't expect it here. You can always have eternal bliss.
Yeah, I think my girlfriend's father told me one time, he's a big Bible fanatic himself, says that this is Satan's dominion, this planet, and eternal suffering and everything is just your lot in life, really. You know, it's just like, well, great. That's comforting.
Very comforting. You know, humans, our life has improved, generally speaking, over the whole world to a point that's unimaginable. Did you know that technically, and this is definitely check me out on anything I say because I'm a researcher. Technically, and the key word is technically, since 1975, we have been at a point on Earth where we can feed, clothe, comfort, educate every human on planet Earth without destroying the planet. It's never happened before in the history of the world. And this is one of the benefits of collective intelligence on the planet. And I can tell you for a fact, and the top people in the world know this. The Dalai Lama knows it. The Pope knows it. The governments know it. The car companies know it. We're coming into a time in history where there will never, ever again be as many jobs as there was once before. That time is over. And so when everybody's telling you jobs, 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 no, we need a new society. And we've come to a time in the world where communism was doomed to fail of its own weight, and the kind of capitalism, especially the kind of capitalism Americans have known, it was doomed to come to its end in our time anyway. And you can't, what happens is it's gotten completely top-heavy, and they don't even care about the middle class anymore. So we're coming into, you've heard of the Magna Carta, the Bill of Rights, and all of those that happen periodically in human history. We're now coming into a new time in which we redefine the rights of the average human, because the future is not about work. We weren't meant to be industrial animals for our eternity. The Industrial Revolution was a small blip on the screen which set everybody free. Did you know that before 1807 and the first machines and factories, the only way you could become rich was to have a lot of slaves or serfs? In 1807, the machines started replacing slaves and created a middle class, a leisure class, and you could become rich without slaves. It set the free. You know, the do-gooders are great, and they tried, but what really freed the slaves was the Industrial Revolution. And in the end, the Industrial Revolution is what frees us. So in some of my workshops, I actually have people contemplate on the thought that what if you had a life in which survival was not an issue, rent was not an issue, what would you do with your life? And most people are stunned until they start thinking about it. I said, well, these are mental exercises you should think about, because this is definitely where the future is going. The future is quite different than the present, just as the present was quite different than the past.
So my opinion is, without pain and suffering, there's no advancement. Without challenge, there's nothing to overcome. And this is a conversation I had last night with my friend. We were both talking about how there's so many people out there who are foolish, ignorant, slave-like, slovenly, you know, lazy, or intellectually dishonest. and never really accomplish anything great in their lives, and never fulfill anything of value to themselves or to really anybody else. And I was reminded of my friend Frederick and what he told me. He used to live in a place where the rich came to play. And what he noticed about these incredibly wealthy kids who had had everything handed to them on a silver platter, they could barely tie their shoes. They couldn't drive a car. They couldn't even make toast. If everything is handed to you, you're worth nothing. You're just incapable. And I think it's really just through challenges and harshness that we develop some form of greatness.
Mm-hmm.
Survival.
You know? And this has been repeated throughout history. You know, I recently was on a what was called the Mayan Galactic 2012 tour. And I was right down there at the pyramids during the, quote, end of the world on December 21st, right? I was right in the thick of it. I was a featured speaker. And basically, it was interesting to see how many people took it so seriously. But one of the things, if you've studied the Mayas or any culture, and the Mayas, I'll just talk about because it's the one we're all sort of interested in right now. There was a time in which the Mayan royalty didn't cook, didn't do anything for themselves. It was all done by the peasants. But as they kept denuding the forest with the slash and burning, you know, the NASA space program has proven now that there was a 400-year period in which a great deal of the rainforest was down. It couldn't support anybody. That's why the culture collapsed. But there's the Mayan story is that there came a morning in which the cook didn't show up for the royal family because her family had starved to death. They weren't even thinking about the middle class or the workers. And you see this repeated all through history. And it's so the thing is, we have to be self-initiated. We have to be self-aware of where we are in history and time. And we're at a time in history now where we have more access to everything than we've ever had in the past. And it's time. Do you expect governments and the ultra wealthy to take care of us? I don't. I expect we need to take care of ourselves. And it's true, in this world, there will always be suffering and pain. There will always be broken bones and broken hearts. But the fundamental suffering of mankind, like food and clothing and shelter, that time now we can solve all of those problems quite easily. And so it is a wonderful time.
Mm-hmm. And another thing that's interesting about our time is that survival's not guaranteed, but it's pretty close to it. Like the amount of children that die in childbirth has been drastically reduced, and those who are born deformed or severely handicapped or something can still survive for a long, long period of time, whereas previously throughout history, it just wasn't even possible for them to survive. It just wasn't possible. Now, what we've got, essentially, is, I don't know, an epidemic of global mollycoddling to a degree, don't you think? People are just soft.
Yeah, I do, especially in countries like America, where we have been on top so long and taken everything for granted. I mean, what we call stress today is trying to figure out what restaurant we're going to go to, or if I might, a parking place at the grocery store. This is what we call stress. When, you know, 1,000 or 5,000 years ago, going out to dinner was a very different issue altogether. You could have just as easily become dinner.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you go out and you try to find dinner with a spear instead of a knife and fork. We'll be right back with Mel and Thomas at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. Welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. It's the final segment. My very special guest is Melon Thomas Benedict from melon-thomas.com. It's M-E-L-L-E-N, not M-E-L-O-N. Speaking of which, we were talking about challenges, frustrations, you know, and this is actually something I think would be really cool. If the world would, as you say, be fed, clothed, and sheltered, and that's the stock standard, okay? You know, you're out of the wind, you're not starving to death, you got enough water, and you're not frickin' naked. If that was the baseline by which everything would come on, there's still a shockingly large amount of massive challenges beyond that. I think if people are distracted through simple survival, then they don't have time or the capacity to solve any problems that are of, you know, greater value or worth. Yeah.
Well, everybody seems
preoccupied with survival. If you take just survival in itself out of the equation, then your objective is not to survive. Your objective becomes to thrive.
I totally believe it. We've been so evolved from day one in Earth history in survival. Survival compromises you because to have a lot of integrity has been very costly. How many people can tell their boss what they think about them? How many people can be that honest? Because survival involves it's a distortion of your integrity also. And how many of us have sold our lives to work for someone else? You see what I mean? We sell our lifetimes to someone else. And I don't know how it is in New Zealand, but in our country, both parents have to work, but usually the mother's salary goes to pay a stranger to raise the child. What's that about? This time is coming to an end.
Well, shoot, I hope so. And it's the exact same here in New Zealand. And what I find interesting about Americans is that they constantly say, I don't know what's going on in New Zealand. Well, here's the point. Everything that happens in New Zealand is very Americanized. It's a lot more familiar than you'd think.
Oh, I know. Oh.
Especially television. Right, well, we have a caller who's been holding online for about 20 minutes. Should we go to them? We've only got a few minutes left in the show anyway. What do you reckon?
Sure.
Sure. Caller, in the 323 area code, you're on the air. Caller, you're on the air. Expect that they're one of those callers that just kind of calls in, listens, and then doesn't say anything. I love that. Okie dokie then. Never mind. Lastly, I think we want to try and cover some ground in this last segment here, Melon. What do you think is most important for people who are not in a situation like us where they have a profound awareness of the world or life after death or anything like that? What is it that stops people going down a path that has no end? Do you sort of know what I mean like that? Like they're doing something that doesn't matter and they don't realize that their life is meaningless? What has to happen to people, or what should people do in order to start giving their lives meaning?
That's very important for those of us that have those kind of lives. I had one of those kind of lives. And what the light has shown me is that to get to the point where we're going, which is literally to colonize other star systems. You know, we can't stay on planet Earth very long, much longer. We're the birds that must leave the nest. You know, every star, every planet has a life and a death. And this planet, it has an awareness that's beyond intelligence. Just like you know you will die someday, this planet is aware of that. And so humans are one of the children of this system who are the stargazers. We've always gazed at stars. And so it took tens of millions of us and hundreds of thousands of years to come to a point. And most of this was with what somebody might think was a meaningless job. It turns out that everything you've ever done is of significant cosmic importance and has added up to the sum total of collective consciousness on planet Earth. All the blood, sweat, and tears that we've all put into this over many lifetimes, it will pay off in the end, nothing has ever been lost, and everything is being gained by this. And so, what we lack right now is this awareness, because our education system, and you really need to get children to understand this. Our education system was basically started in England, our public school system, for the industrial model. And ignorant people were brought off the farms to learn to read and write, to operate machines, and then to become a consumer and a producer. And we're still in that age where that's really all our education system does, primarily for the average individual, is give you a way to earn a living, become a consumer and a producer. But now we're at that point in history where we don't need that many humans to do that much work anymore. And so humans were not meant to be industrial animals, and we have to always constantly reinvent ourselves. If there's one pattern that's constant throughout all of Earth history and human history, is transcendence. No matter what has been thrown at us, no matter what comet's been thrown at the planet, no matter what ice age has happened, we have come through it and have increased in our intelligence, increased in our treasure, so to speak, of value of life. So our pattern is never ruin. Our pattern has always been transcendence. And this starting to catch on all over the planet is that the awareness of we are going to start colonizing stars in the not too distant future. I mean, if you think things have changed since the 1960s, wait another 100 years, you won't even recognize it. Oh, everything that's about to come online now and in the next few years. And so when you reach a point where you can transcend time and space, you don't need to conquer people, you don't need gold and diamonds, you don't need any of that. And that's when humans go to the next level, that new creation that's been talked about. And that level is, they say we're not using 90% of our brain. Well, that's for what's coming. Because we're not meant to be industrial animals. We're meant to be something even more than we can imagine. So for everyone who thinks they have a meaningless, pointless job in life, it's sort of like you feel like you're this ugly caterpillar, and you're on the tree eating every leaf, you don't know what it's about, and the caterpillar doesn't realize that at some point, and some point soon, we will metamorphosize, we will become that proverbial butterfly, a new creation, something we can't even imagine is just over the horizon for humanity.
Okay. So my perspective is people just haven't suffered enough yet. I talked about my sister and kind of how willing she is to just ignore everything that matters and just focus on the materialistic things and things that basically, in my opinion, are of little consequence. And she's never been arrested like I have. She's never been prosecuted and had evidence made up against her. She's never had any of these really horrific experiences that I felt like they were killing me. Like, I thought these experiences were killing me. I don't think she's had the same problems with employers that I've had, where you go in and you're brilliant at what you do, and the employer, for some reason, just doesn't like having people around that are better at the job than he is, so he gets rid of you. that the whole betrayal and disillusionment, I think, is really the key here. People need to be disillusioned massively in order to transcend.
I agree in so many ways. The only way one paradigm ends and a new one begins is when you become totally disillusioned with the present paradigm. And we see that all around us now. People aren't happy with the churches, the families, the banks, the government. We're totally disillusioned about everything. And that's only then you can say, you've suffered enough or whatever. Only when you become totally disillusioned with the system, and this has happened all through history, does the system actually change. And in this period of change is when we need to be fully active in this change. I don't tell people what to believe in, but I tell you, we're in one of those times in history where whatever you believe in, now it's time to believe in it.
Mm-hmm. And ultimately, people really need to start believing in themselves, really.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Mm. Well, Melon, thank you very much for coming on the show today. And I think we'll bring you on again next month or something for a good 2-hour interview, because there's much to discuss.
I'd love it, and I'll have a good webcam by then, I'm sure.
Fantastic. All right. Well, Melon
well,
Benedict.
Thanks, Benny.
Thanks, man. And you can check out his website, ladies and gentlemen, at mellen-thomas with an H, .com. He has books. I believe you've also got DVDs of some description on there. And also the archives for this show will be uploaded to the homepage of the Vinnie Eastwood Show. com. And of course, we'll be sending those links out to Melon while we're at it. And thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for listening. And of course, a reminder that basically the only reason why the show exists is because of the contributions from you, the listeners, and indeed Melon's contribution here today is the result of a listener suggesting he be a guest on this program. So whoever it was that suggested him, I don't have a clue who it was, but thank you. Making a good acquaintance nonetheless. Melon, thank you very much, man. You have a lovely day.